afternoon. Good afternoon. Actually, it's evening. It's 5 p.m. here on the West Coast. Where are you? And what time is it for you? My name is Veronica Entwistle, and you've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Today's Paradigm Shifter is supposed to be Tim Bradbury, chiropractor, but he hasn't shown up yet. So we might be having a hassle. And so what I'm just going to do is talk about myself as a paradigm shifter, or I'm going to talk about you as a paradigm shifter. And my amazing partner, Bob Hoover, is sitting here as a paradigm shifter. What is a paradigm shifter? It's somebody who's actively working toward helping people shift out of consciousness and the way it's been going. Consciousness, the way we knew it on our planet, was kind of an addictive cycling of attachment to economics and security, building the way we build, having an economic situation system all over the world, which is partly run by the unseen. I don't even know what that means. We used to hear it was like five gargantuan families that ran the economics behind the political scene. I don't know. Now we have all kinds of other assumptions, which is that there are dark beings, aliens, blah, blah. But anyway, what we do know is that there's a huge consortium of people who run the economic system on our planet. And that system relies on keeping a whole number of people kind of enslaved to a certain level of economics. So we're talking about paradigm shifting. That's only one little aspect. And when we shift paradigms, hopefully more and more people will become authenticated. More and more people will be in truth, knowing their own power, their own energy, and their ability to create the reality they want. We've all seen The Secret, I'm sure many of you listening have seen it anyway. The Secret is just a movie about creating your reality. And you can't really create your reality if you're really attached to the way the system goes. Because if you attach yourself to the way the system goes, you know you're going to be poor. You know you're going to be limited. You know you're going to be uneducated. You know this, you know that. But actually, when you become more and more authentic, nobody can tell you those things. You can start creating the reality you want. And bringing in the higher, meaning the sources of information from light, from source, from the universe, and actually moving them through a process of clearing out your own subconscious holding patterns, old reactions and things that happened that you stored in your subconscious and convinced your computer-like self that that is the pattern on which you were going to live in this lifetime. We're busting all that open. That's paradigm shifting. Getting hold of the subconscious programming and making it conscious, rearranging it, using visualizations, affirmations, energy work, body work. It's the thing I was talking about from 4 to 5. Body work is a way of moving the way the body has stored old energies and old emotions and old reactions. When you use body work, which is what my chiropractic friend, who for some reason didn't show up yet, when you use chiropractic, acupuncture, when you use cranial sacral, when you use massage and physio and zero point and what, all these different kinds of massage that are coming from all over the world, you really give yourself the opportunity to move along huge blobs of psychology and neurotic behavior and some really intense stuff that just gets to be shifted in blobs so that you start waking up. Waking up comes in paroxysms. Waking up comes in layers and layers of knowing what it is that you have the ability to create after feeling like you were limited or you were like put in a caste system or you were limited by your genetics, by your social programming, by your economics, by your country of origin or whatever. So we're saying this is a paradigm shifting, and my work, my guides and angels are absolutely wonderful, and they absolutely love us all the time. I have no question about that because I can feel it. And when they talk to us, and I channel many days, when they talk to me, I just feel unequivocally loved and supported. And these guides and angels really bring through some terrific energy, like most of the other people on BBS Radio have angels and have guides who help direct some of their limitations and create them into unlimited. And, you know, all of us just feel so the presence of love in such a way that you can't deny it. And in that influence can actually shift you so much that you live in the world differently. Hence, it's a paradigm shifter. Then you have a life that is really open and authentic. So what I want to say is, as a healer, as a an intuitive, my work is about working with what I've been taught to do, is been working into the body. It's as if you've got, see, if you have an energy body, which you do, and what we see, what I'm shown in your energy body, is these really interesting flows of energy that move through you with many, many lines. Just a minute, we have a caller. I'm just going to finish this thought, caller, and then I'll be delighted to put you on the air. We have a flow of energy through our body with many, many lines, and how they flow, a little like contour lines on a map. And then quite often they'll have congestions in there, and that represents where the body has held in the energy form or in the physical form or both, held in old reactions in such a way as to create problems. And then we work with that and move it along. In any case, I have a caller, and you are on the air. Good afternoon.
Hi, Veronica. This is Jean.
Hi, Jean. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm having fun.
Yes, it's a great show, but your shows are always great.
Thanks very much, Jean. I needed to hear that today.
Good.
You made my stomach bright yellow. What's going on in your world?
Well, I just wondered, get a pain off and on on the right side of my navel and up a little bit. Is that just holding on to something that I have get a pain in there?
Yeah, it is. I'm just trying to see what it is. Just hang on a sec.
Okay.
So does it go right into your liver?
Probably. It's up and over from my navel, so probably about right there.
Okay. So can you palpate it just for a minute for me?
Sure.
It's actually, and it goes right up into your arm. Look at that. You feel that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would say that it's from, you know, it's funny, Jean. The guys are saying, it comes from your relationship to your mother.
Oh.
And the reason they bring up because I know you're a grown-up woman, right?
Yes.
Okay. The relationship to your mother has kept you somehow hyper vigilant about something. And it seems like when you're under certain kinds of stress, that part of your body just pulls in a lot of tension. It's the part that holds in anger and strain, sort of deep feelings of threat from situations.
Okay.
You see what I mean? And then down a little bit below the liver, there's a lot about the subconscious.
Uh-huh.
And it just seems like there's something about your childhood and your mother that really taught you to be a little hyper-vigilant about things. So sometimes when people... Now, you've got some stress going on around you. Do you work in an office?
No, actually, I quit working and I take care of my daughter. She was hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, I remember who you are.
Yeah, I take care of her and my grandson every day.
You've got something about how you're holding in your anger and your frustration that came from the way you coped with your mother's energy as a young person, meaning you took on a pattern of responding so that you didn't sort of screw things up and create problems. So you're actually being really nice, and I get that something happened when you used to work in an office of some sort. You used to get some of this too, or you at least built up the preparation for this kind of thing.
Okay, yes, because I worked in an office for a lot of years.
Okay, so I want to say to you, now here comes my guest that I said hadn't arrived yet, so I'll have to change the subject here, but I want to say to you, if you could call it up and feel it, say, I want to feel if Veronica's right, if it really is from my mom, I want to exaggerate it and feel it and really know what it's like, and then I want help washing it out so you can command total release of it. You can also call in golden, like whirling lights. I call it the light gargle. And clean it out. But first you want to call it up and really exaggerate it so you know exactly where it is and what it attaches to.
Okay, yeah, I know. It's from my mother. I know that.
Okay, well, I want to send many blessings to you and your daughter.
Thank you.
All right. Much love to you, Jean. Thanks for your call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, a paradigm shifter, I'm one, you're one. So we have a special paradigm shifter with us today, and his name is Tim Bradbury. And Tim is a chiropractor, and I've been very, very impressed with how he does his work, and I'll let him talk more about that. But he also just returned from shooting not with guns, but with cameras, a journey with what was called the Eagle People in Mongolia. And we're going to get into how does a chiropractor handle riding horses with eagle people in Mongolia, and what did you learn about the body? Welcome, Tim.
Hey.
I'm really glad to see you.
Yeah.
Did you get lost coming here?
I did.
Oh, that's good, because you found your way, right? So say hi to the people, Tim. There's a lot of people listening, and they want to know all about what it's like to ride horses in Mongolia. What'd you go there for?
Well, I went there actually to film, and this is the third year that my wife is gone. But this year, they needed a cameraman.
Great. And you had something to do with helping her project get going. We talked to Susan Bradbury probably a month and a half ago, and Susan's been doing micro-lending in Mongolia and in Burundi. And so she got Tim involved in her project, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Was it worth it?
Oh, it was extraordinary. It was kind of like Outward Bound for adults, you'd say.
Really? why don't you tell us, first of all, what are the Eagle People?
Well, the Eagle People are really, it's a traditional way of life. They're Kazakh, so this is Western Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
And they hunt with golden eagles on their arm, horseback.
Oh, my.
And it's traditional because of the wolves. Population that would decimate their herd during the winter.
So do I understand that they have no weapons, that their eagle is their weapon?
Yeah, for several thousand years they've been doing this, and it's kind of natural predator selection, so to speak. And so these 30 to 35 pounds, and usually they're females,
mm-hmm.
Will take down a 200-pound wolf, and of course sometimes the wolf wins too, but they have to be very hungry, these birds.
They do. You can't see them today because they've gone fishing, I hear, mm-hmm. But we usually have eagles living right up there, the
yeah.
Bald-headed eagles, so they're very majestic characters. Yeah. Are these larger
yeah.
than ours?
Yeah, they're about 8-foot wingspan.
Oh my.
And they're very strong.
Really?
And, for an eagle to kill a wolf, it's not natural prey for them, so they kind of train them to do that.
Who trains them?
Eagle hunters. And about 50 of them left 8 years ago, and now there's 40. So we have all these round numbers. That,
or is it all men that hunt like this?
Traditionally, yeah.
Hello?
I know we have a caller, but first I'm going to have my guest speak for a little bit.
Okay, I'm her current guest, Dr. Tim Bradbury. I'm his mother-in-law. I thought I'd ask a question.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, would you like, go ahead and ask a question. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mom.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Oh, good. You're not talking right now, huh?
Yes, you're talking on air right now.
Are we? Oh, it didn't sound like it because I have the computer going.
Well, you probably want to turn it down because it gets a little crazy. There's a delayed sound.
Okay.
But welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. I've listened to it before and really enjoyed it.
Good, thank you.
Our daughter, Susan Bradbury, Tim's wife, was on once before, and it was very interesting.
Wonderful. Well, I enjoyed that, too, but we're just getting some information from Tim here. What's your question?
Well, I was going to ask Tim, now, when they did some riding of horses, did they have to use a wooden saddle like once before I heard Susan did?
Well, we were in Western Mongolia, and they used wooden saddles in the Eastern with the Mongols.
Uh-huh.
But these are all actually Kazakhs. They have a different language.
I see.
And their saddle is more like a Russian saddle.
Uh-huh.
It's still rather hard, but it's a little different shape, a little more comfortable.
Did it have a built-in heater?
I don't really need it, but...
Oh, you don't? Okay.
eyes. Yeah. Well, it, these eco people sound so very, very interesting. And do they speak English, or that you can understand?
No, there was no English whatsoever. In fact, it was there was zero.
Uh-huh.
We had a translator with us who spoke a little English, and so it was really really heart-to-heart more. There was not a lot of verbiage. It was observation. And
were they really pleased that you were there? And
actually, they're delighted. They come from droves. We were in valleys there that had never seen Westerners, so they say, and so they're quite curious. And I took some, the film I was filming, some wild camels that went by, and I had about 40 Kazakh family people just all gathered around, curious, and it was quite. They're really lovely people. Maybe.
And were they? Are they really proud of their heritage, the Eagle people?
Well, it's all they know, and they're very strong. And they're just gentle and strong, and it's something they've been living there for, all centuries.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have another question?
Well, I really don't. I'll just hang up so that I probably have lots of them, but they're roaring through my mind right now. I just wanted to call and let you both know that Tom and I are listening, and think your program is wonderful, Veronica.
Thank you.
Yes, and Tim, you've been doing some wonderful things with your work in filming all these different eco people in such in Mongolia, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Uh-huh, bye.
Bye. So that was nice. So when can we see your movie?
Well, actually, it's 3 years of filming. I was one of three cinematographers. So the first year was with the Sotin people, which are traditional nomads in the north on the Siberian border, and they're reindeer people. Their religion is more inclined towards shamanistic, and they have their own distinct language. And then last year, they went, and it was with the Mongols in the south, and they're horse people. And they have, of course, sheep and yaks as well, but that was a whole another culture. Even though they're in the same country, they have their own distinct differences that way in languages. And this year, the third year, was with Kazakhs and with Tuvan.
Tuvan.
Mm-hmm. And Tuvan have the throat singing. They've got that in their culture. And
can you do some of that for us?
I can't. I mean, I had training, but it's really more than meets the eye. It's like
I bet it is.
You sing from your
yeah
track.
We were saying earlier, too bad we didn't have a sample of it to play on the air, but we will one day.
Well, I could, I used to think I could throat sing till I went there, and now I won't even try.
Well,
but you were talking about the eagles and the training, and how it's not really natural for them to kill wolves. They'd be more inclined to the rabbits and foxes and other birds, so they have to be really hungry before they do it, and so it's mostly in the winter months, of course, when the wolves are around for their livestock.
So where do they get the eagles? I mean, if they're going to train this kind of eagle, how do they select the eagles that?
We're with an eagle hunter there that explained this, and there's two types of eagle. There's an eagle that they get from the nest, and usually one dominates over the other. That's the survivor.
And that's how they can tell?
That's two ways of getting them from the nest, and the other is after about a year old, they kind of net them and trap them. And they're a lot more difficult to train when they're a year old, and a lot more difficult to really connect with, but they're actually better hunters because they've been out in the wild with the
I see. So their instincts are a little bit stronger.
And they also have a natural instinct, so to speak. Well, they have a learned knowledge of what's prey and what's not, whereas if you take it from the nest, it doesn't know anything.
How interesting. And then they train it, but they must have to keep it hungry.
To hunt.
Yeah. Is that, I mean, that must be a real challenge, eh?
Yeah.
How long do eagles live?
They live about 30 years.
And are they faithful to their masters? Do they have that kind of association like we expect from our pets?
Yeah, they do. which is also, they can be quite aggressive and dangerous if it's a non-handler around.
Mm.
So they keep them usually hooded if it's someone who's not associated with the bird.
Well, now, you told me a pretty startling story earlier. Do you want to share that story? Or?
Well, I hesitated to say that story, but that's...
I think you should, but people at home know that this story is a little bit... This is the only harsh story he's going to tell.
Well, with Aralbai, who's... As I said, there's about 40 traditional eagle hunters left in Mongolia.
And they essentially hunt for wolves, right?
No, they hunt rabbits and foxes as well for food for themselves. But the wolf story is because in the wintertime, generally, they can lose half or more of their livestock to wolves and or in the weather. So
the eagles are used as protection.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ways and means of this is just using eagles, and for thousands of years that's what they've had. And so Aralbai, who is the number one eagle hunter in Mongolia, he had entered two birds last year, and he came first and second place, and they came from all over the world, told the story about another eagle hunter, which is not far from where he lives, named Surinam, I believe.
Has he been a long-term eagle hunter?
He was. Even older, I believe, than Aralbai. And he had a bird that he got from the nest. So, again, this is a very aggressive time of year. It was hungry. And this bird doesn't know natural prey from not. And he left it alone in his gur, which is a Mongolian for yurt, which is a Russian word. And he came into the gur, and the eagle had his 9-year-old son, heart, actually, tore it out of his chest.
Okay.
So he still hunts with eagles, you know, the respect of it, but they can be quite aggressive.
It's a serious thing. So why would he do that? Would they normally do that with a child?
Well, he was very hungry.
Mm.
And again, they don't hunt, and eagles is not wolves are not a natural prey for them, generally.
Mm.
They're very aggressive and lethal. In fact, sometimes the wolf wins.
Mm. That's a really sad story in a way, actually. You mentioned it to me earlier and said it was like people who keep loaded guns in the house and the child is alone with the guns. It's a little like that, right?
Yeah, and it's Suriname, just his love of the bird and respect of just the whole facts and just their ways and means. He didn't kill the bird outright, but he removed its talons and set it free, which is kind of a
slow pain
thing as well. But that's the story. Yeah.
Wow, that is really a sort of shocking story, but it would make sense because we keep hearing about animals that are wild never lose that instinct.
Yeah, again, this is a bird that was taken from the nest, so it doesn't know natural prey from not. That's why,
It was taken from the nest, so it never did live in the wild.
No, so everything is prey to, it didn't have that.
But they're really smart animals, aren't they? Smart birds?
They're very intense. They're very instinctive, I would say. Smart, yeah. They're very, in some ways, they feel kind of clairvoyant, being
really
around them.
Really powerful.
Dimensional, yeah.
And so you put, they put a hood over them, and that stops them from...
Yeah, the hood.
Put them to sleep, or...?
They're not aggressive. They can't see. And that's traditional for falconry.
Hmm.
Eagles, yeah.
That's an interesting story. Did you actually experience eagles? Did you carry one on your arm?
I did, not horseback, but on the ground, and they're quite heavy. They have actually a wooden dowel that they put under their elbow that hooks into the saddle because they ride for miles, the eagle.
How far, like 10 miles or 20 or 30?
Oh, could be more.
Really? And how often do they go out?
Usually in the late fall,
mm-hmm.
and winter's traditional.
All through the winter?
I don't know.
I don't even know what weather's like in Mongolia. What
well, when we were there, it was about a 70-degree temperature swing. So it was like 80 degrees in the day, and it was 10 degrees at night. So we had
that. Oh, my.
And then in the winter time, it can be still 70-degree temperature swing, but it can, like, not get above freezing and then go way sub-zero.
Wow. So tell me about the people. Are they festive? Do they have rituals? What?
The people are just really strong and elegant and gentle and very, very natural.
Hmm.
They have a sense about them. It's, for me, I had to kind of downgrade my external energy a lot. I noticed that.
You have to get very still. And
because
mm-hmm. they're present with now, and they're present with the earth and so on,
yeah.
and the elements and so on. So what do you...
Well, the food's challenging because with the weather conditions it is, fruits and vegetables are not able to grow, and the soil is rather poor. So it's mostly meat and milk products. So
what kind of meat?
Well, goat, yak, and they had broad-tail sheep and horse. Those are the four main ones, yeah.
So well, how do they serve it? Like, is it open fire? Is it? Do they live in tents? I don't know a thing. Isn't that interesting?
They live in gurs, which are like yurts. They're very portable. They're nomadic, so they're with their herds, and their whole life is surrounding their animals. So they go to an area, and they have to keep moving because they'll just use the grass up in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're constantly in the morning gathering the animals because they wander, and then they're kind of with them in the day, and there's big dogs that are there as well, which are, again, quite intense. But
are they ready? The dogs are protector. They're wild
very,
enough to be...
Yeah, they can be about 200 pounds. They look like mastiffs. And,
wow.
They have to be able to handle wolves. So they're...
So they're capable of killing a wolf if they need to protect their...
Yeah, they are, but it's probably not a good idea to do that too much, yeah.
So let's go back to what you ate. Let's get
all the food. Yeah,
the body, we're talking
that.
Body mind now.
Oh wow! So the food was basically meat, and it isn't anything that I really recognize because it's just kind of mostly ground and not really any spice to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
And the food was a little challenging. It wasn't really a cuisine trip, but that's all they have.
And what was it, with rice or?
No, there's no rice because they can't grow rice. I noticed the little white bread.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to get that somehow. But
how did you feel? How were you able to? I mean, you eat pretty carefully normally, don't you?
Well, I had to eat something, but I didn't eat a lot.
We talked about it before you went. You're going to take some kimchi for your...
Well, I was afraid I'd explode on the plane, actually, so I didn't. But I think I probably lost a few pounds.
How was your digestion? Did you take acidophilus, or did you have things like dysentery that, I mean, some of this country...
I didn't, but I think the potential was there. They had vodka, which they make out of mare's milk, out of horses.
Oh, my.
And which is quite unique, and they make a kind of a yogurt and lots of cheese, real hard cheese that they grow, they dry in the sun. And so there is no food there, but it's the people are, they look fairly healthy, but they're definitely missing some enzymes. I think.
And how long do they live generally?
Well, I think it's actually in the late 50s, early 60s is a typical age.
And do they have a lot of children, or just...
I think what I didn't ask that question, but it seemed like they all had three or four, yeah.
You need a few to keep the group growing.
Yeah, and I saw six-year-old boys out there mustering horses.
Hmm.
And six, yeah.
I think what I understood you say is that Mongolia is a place with a lot of horses. They have a lot of wild horses.
Yeah, they have actually more horses than people there. And
is that an improvement? How many cars did you see?
Well, I saw ours, and there weren't many. There were very few cars. There's no roads.
Hmm. That must have been a nice change. How did that feel?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you actually drive by compass, don't you? I mean, you don't even have road signs.
And there's none of that noise. The noise is all animal noises. How did you sleep?
Well, we had tents, and we put them up, and we were at 12, 13, 14,000 feet.
Ah, were you sleepy?
I felt the height there.
The altitude, I bet.
Yeah, we were looking up in the 17,000-foot mountain range and Russia and also in China. So we're the Tuvans and the Russian Altai and the Kazakh family in the Chinese and really high mountain people. Yeah.
Did you have trouble? Like, were you comfortable? Were you cold? Were you warm? Were you comfortable? Were you physically challenged, like aches and pains that come from riding and not, you know, it's not a lifestyle you normally live?
Well, it took everything I had just to stay in my seat. It was a Russian van, like 1950s, and a Russian four-wheel drive van. So the engine was above the floorboards, the intake exhaust was above. So we traveled through pretty deep rivers.
Mm, wow.
And went through startling road conditions and broke down five times. But we had a cook, an interpreter and driver, and the driver actually rebuilt the transmission out in the bush as well.
I suppose that's part of the resume required for a driver in that part of the world, eh?
Yeah.
So did you encounter, for example, the wolves that you were talking about, which are sometimes too many of them for the people? Mm-hmm. Did you encounter any animals that you had to...
The wolves generally aren't around until winter. They're out on their own because there's plenty of rabbit, there's plenty of other food for them. They're no threat to the large livestock until things get really frozen.
Mm-hmm. And they can't get what they need very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so about you, when you were riding or even when you were in the Russian Land Rover, it's not a Land Rover, but...
we call it a Jeep.
What did you do with your own mind? We were talking about body and mind over, and did you have to use all of those talents, which I know you have?
Well, it was actually quite numbing. I think I just had to totally relax and succumb to the environment on all levels, and because everything was a little challenging. It was, as far as comfort, it was always... very little, really, and it was an enormous sky, the vastness and the people, but physically, you have to, it's exhausting. But
I wondered how you cope. We all cope in different ways. I know when I travel, sometimes I go into a whole different space, and I don't...
Well, we rode horses for 6 days, and the camel...
Could you walk after? Are you normally a horseback rider?
In the past, but of course it's... that was a while back, and I was quite sore, and I had the opportunity to ride this Bactrian double hump camel. It was about 3,000 pounds, and we were up about 14,000 feet going down a very steep hillside, and his hind leg went out, and I saw that he was falling, so I bailed off and made it out from underneath him. But then he had little tears down his eyes. It was very emotional. So,
oh, really? Was it really emotional, or was it cold air?
You know, this whole weeping camel thing, you know, you hear, they're very, seem to be very emotional beings.
Hmm.
He had kind of
I don't think I ever knew that. Really?
Yeah.
Very sensitive.
I don't know why that response was, but it was quite touching.
Did he actually fell over?
Yeah, he fell on the side. You know, I'm about 12 feet up my eye level. A good romp.
Wow. Did you help him at all? Did you have to heal him?
Well, afterwards I kind of checked his atlas a little bit, and it wasn't quite my first camel.
You're not going to put that sign on your door?
No.
Bring your camels for Tim Bradbury. So, let's see now. I was wondering if we'd like to talk about, did you have any healing thing that you had to do while you were there on yourself?
Myself? Well, for me, it was just letting go, just non-judgment, and I really had to toughen up inside at all levels, and being with these people who are so settled and comfortable and rather our concepts would be austere conditions, was really a beautiful breakthrough in that I really felt at peace and comfortable with all the intensity and weather and food, and I was just very conditioned to that.
So they're really attuned to nature and
yeah.
So on, right? And you said you worked on their some of them. You worked on some of them?
Yeah, with the Mongolians on Eastern, after we were in Western Mongolia, we were a couple of days with the Mongolians, which speak Mongolian, not the Kazakhs or Tuvan, which are different languages, and they're horse people, and I think there was someone with headache, so I worked with them, and then there was a lineup of individuals.
Oh, interesting. And didn't you say that they hold their spine differently or something?
Yeah, it's quite, they're very strong, and they have some different patterns which I haven't seen generally, because they're so active.
Do you think it's because they're so active? Do you think that kind of thing is genetic, or is it because they're on horses all the time? Or is
I think all of it.
All of the
sure, all of it, yeah.
Tell me why, actually, I'd like us to talk about chiropractic for a bit, unless you have something to say, but I would like you to say what this whole filmmaking and project is all about.
Well, it's actually my wife's project with the Sound Essence Project, and it's really the dying traditional stories of Mongolia. When I say dying, it's like the pre-Soviet Union, and then the post now, a lot of the elders have these old traditional stories, and it's recording them not only for Mongolia, but for all of us. These indigenous people are actually at risk. Their nomadic lifestyle, potentially, and their stories are so old and beautiful. So,
Are they like a lot of the indigenous people? Are they prey to, say, the processed foods and alcoholism and all that kind of thing?
Well, not so much we were, because there was just no stores, there's no civilization. There's that's just not available.
No progress.
No. No, pretty much what they eat is what they raise, and even a lot of their clothes are from their own, well, most of it, everything.
Isn't that wonderful? So there are actually no stores.
No.
That must have felt really different, huh?
No stores, no. Well, it was actually quite refreshing. I quite liked it, yeah.
Great. Oh, I'm sure that would be a real breath of... I mean, it's a whole different reality, isn't it? So the project, the Sound Essence Project, also included a micro-lending situation in some bakeries, I think.
Yeah.
One of the three sections that you spoke of.
Yeah, that was with some women in more central Mongolia that started a bakery.
And is in the Sound Essence Project, is this all part of the same project? Are these facets of the same?
Yeah, this is one project. And the film is another.
Oh, the film is a separate project.
Yeah, but they're all interrelated. Yeah.
So people who are really interested might want to check the website, eh?
Yeah.
Which is soundessence.org?
Yeah, www.soundessenceproject.org.
SoundEssenceProject.org.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be pictures of Mongolia? Will there be pictures of your experience with the Eagle people or anything if they check the website?
Well, I don't know quite yet. We just got back, but probably near future, yeah.
That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? Now, I'd like us to jump into, and I don't mind if we go back to the Eagle people, if you have other stories or experiences you want to share. But I'd like to talk about the body-mind, or difficulties in the body and so on that you talk about as a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
You helped me so much one time. I had a root canal, and it had to be done three different times.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody seemed to take responsibility. Somehow it was my fault, but it kept blowing up. And nobody could help it, and I'm finally Dr. Orexic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go near anybody, but you helped me. You worked with, through the mouth, actually, I think 4 different sessions, and then it went right down. This is after 2 years of frustration and pain, actually. So I wondered if you wanted to talk about something to do with maybe the sphenoid or the...
Those are all cranial bones that all connect, interweave together that form our skull.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about the emotional body as well, the physical body, that are actually interconnected, not really as separate as we think. They're one is intimately connected to the other, and the skull actually is a keystone to a lot of our emotional experience.
So how do you read it? Like, for example, I don't remember what you told me, but I remember I was deeply touched, and you talked about the sphenoid as being, as holding something. I know it holds the skull together, right?
Well, it's a keystone to all the other bones, yeah.
Well, that's fairly relevant, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I did remember you saying something about beliefs and attitudes, and I don't remember what it was. I know that I went through a huge change emotionally as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, not weeping and crying, going into a process, just a relief of holding, maybe when we consider holding our beliefs in a certain place. And that's the thing that I was talking about with the first show today, is the holding our beliefs is very often that which retards our evolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes sense, doesn't it? So, and then we talk about aging, and I guess that holding is also what gives us an aging trauma, isn't it? Do you have anything to say about that, or how people can release, or things you've learned?
Well, aging, yeah. I, again, the mind, certainly how we treat our bodies, important, but our mind really is number one as far as our aging, and what we really think about affects us. It's a really profound, it's as simple as that. So we kind of create that for ourselves.
So as we get older, what do you recommend for people? Is it change your thinking?
The changing your thinking, just like, I guess, Mongolia for me was a little outward bound, got out of my comfort zone, but I could have been in a really uncomfortable situation, but I kind of shifted it and made it, I was quite actually happy after a while, even in the austere. So I think with our life, we... regardless of what comes our way, we can shift our attitude towards it, and has a profound effect on the physical.
So that can actually release enough tension to create healing, even in dire situations at times, can it? I'm not saying we have to say that all the time.
Well, most all disease starts from the mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there's physical aspects and traumas and chemical, but they're really all of those are predisposed from the mind first.
Why did you go into chiropractic? Oh, actually, you have a very interesting history. We should get into that a little bit.
Well, I was a blacksmith and a farrier for 12 and a half years before, and I worked in Scotland and in this country, and I realized that my body was wearing out, but I loved working with the mechanics and the dynamics of the horses, and I was in a chiropractic office because my back was a little rough, and chatting with the patients that were there, and I was quite impressed, and just observing that can help people like that without a trauma.
Cut a knife. And so you went into it, and have you? What do you keep learning? Do you learn more and more all the time about?
Well, there's really no ceiling to it. It's the body of hope, the electromagnetic energy of the body is always dynamic, and that's really what we're accessing
when you're doing your work. What can people do to enter their own energetic body?
I think really being in the present.
Being in the now.
Being in the present, and I think we can be most healthy and cure. A lot of diseases are slowed down by really being in the present, because that's where we closest thing we can experience as far as eternal nature. Otherwise, we're someplace else. We're in the past or future.
Do you meditate?
I don't formally say every day, but I have time out, so to speak, where I'm quiet.
Being quiet.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about things like chronic fatigue and ADD, brain chemistry stuff and so on. Do you have any advice about that or suggestions for people at home?
Well, you know, we have disease names for different things. Like ADD is the hyperactivity. It's an imbalance of brain firing. And so the individual is getting more information than they can really handle. And they're just being real honest with their behavior because they're overstimulated by all this. They don't know where to go with it, where to put things.
Do you work with people on diet and so on, brain chemistry? I don't know.
Yeah.
Where do you go with that?
No, sure. Diet's important. You know, it's both diet. The whole way of being in life is moderation.
Mm-hmm.
And mental, physical, all that is being in a more of a middle ground, not one way or the other.
Why do you think so many people, like on a generic or on a national level, why is there so much depression right now, and why is there so much, for example, prostate cancer? I have my own theories, because don't we all, but I thought maybe you had some.
Well, now you're getting me out there.
Let's get political.
Well,
no.
being so bold to say, we talk about the mind, that we talk about cancer, you said. That's a kind of a big one.
Well, prostate cancer, I think, is
the name. Prostate cancer specifically, or any kind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it, again, is mental. It's anger turned inward.
Anger turned inward.
And our body responds. So, and that's either prevention or actually treatment. It's really important to not self-destruct ourselves. And, of course...
But it's a national epidemic, it's global, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we got other factors, too. We've got chemical factors. We've got some other things as well that predisposes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just one. It's not just the mind. It's not just the body. It's the combination. Yeah.
With chronic fatigue people, I often think that when I look at people who have fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, and I'm not sure if I really know the delineation, but I often find that they're really suppressed. And I query with myself, how much illness is from suppression, whether that comes from the mind or...
Yeah, it's an autoimmune problem we find in fibromyalgia, and you can't really see a lot on lab tests. In fact, it wasn't even recognized for years, but we do know it exists. And again, it can be a process or a result after a physical trauma and or mental trauma. It actually manifests. And again, it's an autoimmune. It's where the body produces substance P, which is responsible for pain. And it's a chemical. It's a chemical that floats in the body and creates pain from type C fibers, which are specifically pain fibers. And that's a phenomenon.
Have you seen results working with, for example, cranial sacral or the various things that you do with people?
Yeah, sure. Whenever you take the stress off a nervous system, you help the mental and physical. They're intimately connected.
And some of it is just taking the pressure off so people can rearrange their... Do you have anything? And we have to be done in about... 1 minute.
1 minute.
Do you have any great recommendations, the flat recommendations for people besides changing your mind, and change your reality?
Well, I think truly, just from my own journey, I've taken responsibility for ourselves and not be, we're not really victims here. We can shift and change our present and future by shifting our relationship.
Wonderful. I really agree with you. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in, and it's been wonderful talking
to you. Well, thank you.
We only had one caller today, but it was a good caller, and maybe you'll come back again. And we'd like to hear more about the Sound Essence Project and how it comes along. So we'll stay in touch about that, too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for listening to Paradigm Shifters. Today's shifter has been Tim Bradbury, who's a chiropractor here in Bellingham, Washington, and an eagle hunter, eagle people writer with cinematographer from, is it Kazakhstan or should I say Mongolia?
Western Mongolia.
Yeah, and we hope to see the film of that at some point soon. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next Tuesday at 4 p.m. for Radiance by Design and 5 for our next Paradigm Shifter, and I'll let you know who it's going to be. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Many blessings.